Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
This is the Awful Announcing Podcast presented by BetDSI, episode number 33. My name is Ben Heisler. I appreciate you guys being here. This week's feature guest is Fox Sports' Shannon Spake. She's awesome. She's been with Fox since July of 2016, hosting and covering Fox Sports' coverage of NASCAR, which I thought was pertinent, being Daytona 500 week. And she's also covering the NFL, college football and basketball, and a name and face that we've seen for several years on the sidelines back when she was on ESPN. Very insightful. She was really candid and open about her path to get here, and also really dove into some tough things that she had to persevere through early on in her life. And I really enjoyed getting to know Shannon, and I really believe you guys will too. She was terrific on this edition of the Awful Announcing Podcast. But before we get to that conversation, I should remind you that this podcast is presented by our friends at BetDSI.com. And if you've been listening to the last several shows since they've come on board as the feature sponsor of the Awful Announcing Podcast, you guys will know that I'm not just an advocate for BetDSI, but I am also a BetDSI user. The site makes it incredibly easy when it comes to sports wagering. Super easy interface for both desktop and mobile. There's multiple books within the site, so you can search for the best odds right there on the main page. And they're top rated on all the different betting review sites. You know, I actually used them for live betting over the weekend. It was my wife's birthday, and she's a huge Kansas Jayhawks fan. I think the original line was, 11, 10 and a half maybe. Either way, it felt a little bit too big. But I didn't want to go one way or another before the game started. And I thought, you know, maybe if Oklahoma State keeps it close for a while. And sure enough, in the second half, they got it to within a one-possession game. And so right from my phone, right inside Allen Fieldhouse, I hopped on BetDSI.com. I checked the live odds, and I saw Kansas at -6.5. And I thought, okay, I like this. Bingo, here we go. So sure enough, bet went right through. Funds were transferred to my account immediately after I ended up winning that bet, and off we went. And they have options for everything, all the different major sports to even politics and reality TV. And here's the best part. For Awful Announcing Podcast listeners, you guys get a 100% bonus match when you go to BetDSI.com and use the promo code AWFUL100. That's AWFUL100. So you go, maybe you deposit a couple $100. They'll match that couple hundred right from the very beginning. So it's a great time to jump in. March Madness is just around the corner. The Daytona 500 is this Sunday. So again, promo code AWFUL100 at BetDSI.com. Remember, it's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI. So when you guys settle in this Sunday for your Daytona 500 fix, she will be with you pretty much all day, beginning with NASCAR Race Day Daytona 500 from 11 to 1 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Then there will be coverage on Fox from 1 to 2:30 p.m. And then, of course, the 2019 Daytona 500 starting at 2:30. But Let's say you want to hang out with her throughout the week. She'll be with you as the host of NASCAR Race Hub on FS1. You can also find her on Fox's coverage of college sports in the NFL. She's also a really fun follow on social media over at Shannon Spake on Twitter. Hey, Shannon, thanks for joining us.
I'm exhausted just hearing all those things that you just said, reminding me how long this week is going to be and how awesome this week is going to be. But thanks for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you, you know, about all that stuff you just said and about the coverage that we have starting this weekend on Fox.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And also, I want to talk to you about your story. You have a fascinating story of getting to where you are now. And also something that we were just talking about before we started chatting today is that you and I are big fans of one of the radio icons in the world, in Howard Stern. Like, can we start there? Like, what first got you into Howard Stern? Because, you know, to me, when I was trying to discover what it was like to work in radio and to work in media, I always admired his ability to get anybody either comfortable or uncomfortable, but still being able to get the most out of their guest. What attracted you to listening and being a part of the Howard Stern Show?
Yeah, I think that that's it, right? So I didn't listen to him a whole lot growing up. I've kind of found him over the last, I would say, decade, maybe last 10 years. And I think I kind of really was turned on to him when I started to do triathlons. So I started to do longer runs and longer bike rides. And I was looking for something to kind of occupy the time when I was out for hours and hours, and became a fan through that, right? I just started listening to him. And sometimes, like, if I would be driving to Duke or if I would be driving to North Carolina or I had really long drives from an airport to a college town when I was covering college sports, I found my SiriusXM app and would just go back and listen to all of the interviews that he's done. And I think I actually have listened to probably every single one that's on the Sirius app on demand of Howard Stern. And again, like you just said, it's the medium that he is able to utilize. One, there's no cameras in his guest space. Two, he doesn't have to follow any commercial lines, right? He could just kind of blow through an hour and 15 minutes, which gives him an opportunity to make people really comfortable. And I think the biggest thing for me that I love about Howard Stern is that he is truly a fan. And it doesn't matter how much money he makes or how famous he is or how many famous people he knows in his life and spends time with. When he does these interviews with people, he is a fan. And you can really feel that from the questions that he asks. And I love that about him. He's just a normal guy when he's interviewing some of these amazing people that he has so much respect for. It's cool because I actually got to go on the Howard Stern wrap-up show. I've done it twice now. I was connected to Gary Delabate, of course, Baba Booey, through an article that was written here at the Charlotte Observer. Gary was tagged in it because I had told a story about running into Gary in the halls of SiriusXM NASCAR Radio or SiriusXM. And I was with the president of Sirius at the time. And when Gary Delabate walks by you, you automatically, as a Stern fan, want to scream, Baba Booey. And I didn't because I had to act cool because I was with the president. And unfortunately, but fortunately, that story was told. Gary was tagged, and Gary reached out to me and said, if you're really a super fan, why don't you come on the wrap-up show? So I've been on it twice now with John Hine and Gary, and it's been amazing. I haven't had the opportunity to meet Howard yet, but I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed that our paths will at least cross maybe in the hallways one day.
I was going to say, at least you have a really good connection into the show. Like, you've networked this part of it very well.
It's true. It's so cool because we did get to go in and see his studio last time I was there. The first time I wasn't able to, but the second time. And, you know, they're like, hey, you can take pictures, but just don't post them. And I was like, no, I'm not going to take any pictures because I want to come back. I would like to come back. I don't want to make anybody upset. So it was just really cool to kind of see where Robin sits and to see where, you know, where Fred sits and obviously Howard.
You've had a lot of famous interviews. Was that your most exciting moment as an interviewee?
Ooh, that's a really tough question that I know. I mean, well, I got to interview Charlize Theron last year at the Daytona 500, and I was total fangirl on that one. I've been able to be around and not necessarily always interview, but be around some really, really cool people. I will tell you this, all the famous people aside that I've met, all the athletes that I've met and interviewed, I'm part of the Ironman Foundation, and I host their annual premiere, their hour-long premiere every year in New York City. And I have to tell you, the people that I meet doing that are some of the most inspirational and amazing people that I've ever met in my entire life. And so I love the athlete, and I love telling those stories. Again, I think the Ironman Foundation, the people that I meet along the way there are probably the ones that fill my heart cup the most.
It's a cool story, especially your connection to training for an Ironman. You're a part of the Ironman Foundation ambassador program. You've run a marathon 3 times. And a lot of people say, well, you know, like that's an accomplishment in and of itself. But in reading a little bit more about you, this is something that you really had to work even harder for, considering a lot of the stuff that you went through. I think it was around age 13, you dealt with scoliosis and back surgery. And did you remember thinking at the time that when you were going through all of this, that this was something that you ultimately wanted to do? Or was it just sort of, let's get through this and sort of take it one day and ultimately we'll see where it goes? Like, were you this driven at that point in your life?
I don't think so. I think I've always been an all-in kind of person. So I was a swimmer when I was younger, and I was all in with that. I feel like, you know, when I went out and sort of, you know, had my party days where you'd go to bars and you'd hang out with your friends, I was all into that at that time. So I've always been kind of like an all-in person. And when I decided, you know, obviously the Ironman stuff and triathlons and marathons, those are all-in kind of things. Those are not things that I think that I could do well if I kind of just dabbled in them. And I think it's the same with, I know it's the same with my job. It's the same with being a mom. It's the same with being a wife. It's an all-in kind of thing. The scoliosis, I was probably, around 11 or 12 years old when I had the surgery, the corrective surgery for my scoliosis. And I had to stop all activities at the time because back in the day, long, long time ago when I was that age, they feared that physical activity would actually make your scoliosis worse. And of course, then I had these rods put in my back that kept me out of school for a little while and kept me from doing physical activities until some of the fused parts of the rod and the spine were set. And maybe those experiences, I think, made me just push a little bit harder. It's funny because I oftentimes really forget that I have those rods in my back, and I've had twins, and I didn't carry them to term, but I carried them for a long time. And like you said, I've done I've done 3 70.3 half Ironmans. I trained for a full one this past year. Unfortunately, the area that the race was supposed to be held in was devastated by Hurricane Michael 2 weeks before the race. So I instead went and did the New York City Marathon, which I've now done twice. So I never feel like anyone should be told that they can't do something. Obviously, you have to listen to your body, but the Ironman stuff and the running and all of that physical stuff, it kind of completes the circle of who I am. I need that for me. And it's an important part of my life.
When you're running a marathon, I've always been intrigued to ask people this question because I sort of I admire them so much. Because I get tired after, like, you know, 2 minutes of running. When do you hit your stride? When do you get to the point where you're like, I'm no longer tired? I feel good at where I am. Does it happen early for you? Does it happen sort of in the middle?
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, because there's so many people that go out there and say, I hate running. And I always ask them, like, well, how far did you run? And they're like, well, I went 2 miles or I went 3 miles. And for me, like, I hate running at 2 miles as well. Everything hurts. You're just like, this stinks. I need to get through this. But I think right around mile 6 is where things kind of fall in line, is kind of how I say it. It's almost like being in a yoga class where you kind of find your zen and find your focal point and you can kind of just plow through. And so I think for me, when I'm doing long distance, mile 6 to mile like 18 always feel pretty decent. And anything before or after that, you're just your tongue is hanging out and you're dogging it.
All right. So next time I really start to train for a marathon, I'll remember.
18. There you go. Go 18.
6 through 18, that long stretch, I'm going to feel fantastic.
I know. It sounds crazy. And I know it is. You don't just go out one day and do, you know, 18 miles. You obviously build up to
of
it.
Course.
But I got to tell you, I really think that all of the physical activity I do, I think it helps. I know it helps me relate to the athletes that I cover because I understand what it's like to be in a zone. I understand what it's like to be physically trained for something and have to deal with an injury or a setback or those types of things. And I think I always try to, when I go into an interview with a player or a driver, I try to figure out how I would want the question asked to me if I was the person that kind of was in that situation. And I know that the physical things that I do better prepare me for some of those situations.
Have you found yourself in a moment where your long history of training in Ironmans and running and being a part of a marathon, have you found a situation where you're either talking with an athlete pre-interview or before the camera turns on where that's something that the two of you guys really connected on?
You know, I do have a lot of, like, I was just with Jay Wright from Villanova a couple weeks ago, and he was fascinated. He was fascinated by the whole stuff that I was doing, the Ironman stuff. And I do have a lot of people that come up and give me props. The GM of the Chicago Bears, he's done some half Ironmans and full Ironmans. And so he came over and talked to me about that. And most of the time when I see the football players, they're just like, they think it's crazy that I do this stuff. But, you know, some of the NASCAR drivers are in the endurance community. Jimmy Johnson, Jamie McMurray, Casey Kane did a lot of them, Josh Wise. And that's kind of actually how I started. Jimmy and those guys started doing it back in like 2013, 2014. And I thought to myself, like, hey, this might be a fun little hobby to pick up. And over the years, it's definitely evolved into more than just a hobby. It's certainly a lifestyle for me. And I think that those guys could relate to that as well. I mean, Jamie and Jimmy just went and did a half marathon yesterday before they jumped in the car for the Clash. And so, yeah, certainly there's a lot that I can talk to the athletes about, given the fact that I am an athlete as well.
So you talked about being all in, that so much of your life is about that mindset and that mentality. When did you start to feel all in on getting into broadcasting? And it was something that you knew that was what you wanted to do and where you wanted to go.
Yeah, so I moved to New York City right out of college. I was like that story, right? Pack up the U-Haul truck and go. No job, barely a place to live. You know, bought the bed when I got up there, kind of thing. And I think over the years, I've realized, and you being a Howard Stern fan, you've probably heard this a couple of times in his interviews when he asks people, like, what would you have done if this didn't work out? And they just don't have an answer because they're like, this had to work out. And I don't necessarily think that TV was where I wanted to be immediately. People that I grew up with when I was younger will tell you that I always talked about this and always wanted to do this. But I think I just wanted to work hard, and I wanted to do something that I really enjoyed. And it took me a couple months in New York to kind of find my way. And I always say that TV found me. I was very fortunate. I got a job at Nickelodeon after literally riding the elevator and passing out hand resumes, like printed resumes.
Oh,
of course,
wow.
Back then, you know, in the Stone Ages, we didn't actually have, like, we actually had to mail resumes in or hand them. And so I got a job at Nickelodeon. And, you know, then I was able to, because of being in the Viacom family, make a move over to CBS News, was able to work on the early show over at CBS, and then work on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel because Bryant happened to be at CBS at the time. And that's kind of when I found my love for sports. I did some stuff with the NFL Today. And when I left New York, because I love New York, but I wasn't a New Yorker. And after 3 years of being there, I just wanted a little bit more in terms of balance. So I moved to the Charlotte area, which was where my family had relocated to while I was in New York. And just luckily found some jobs here, and an on-air position opened up. And I auditioned for it, and it's been sort of a big old snowball rolling down a big hill ever since. And that was back in like 2003, 2004. I've been very blessed, but I've definitely felt each and every step of the ladder as I've been continuing to climb. And it's been a fun journey. It's also been a really hard journey, and one that I would not exchange for anything.
What do you think the hardest part of that journey was?
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Finding balance, I think, finding balance. And I had the experience, I was in New York City for September 11th, and I worked at a news station on September 11th. And I remember the experience of seeing all of those missing signs and all of those people that did not come home that night, who probably put things off because of work. And that was sort of the message or the lesson that I kind of internalized from that whole experience, was that I was not going to, if I wanted to do a family, if I wanted to have a family, or if I wanted to do things, I was going to make it work, even if I was still working very, very hard. And I think that's been the hardest thing. I mean, I've been on the road traveling since 2004, and I have 9-year-old twin boys, and I have a husband. And I think that's probably been the hardest thing, is just the guilt that you feel for being away and trying to manage that internally. But that was not a part of my life that I was willing to sacrifice, my family. And a lot of that lesson, like I said, I learned from the tragedy that happened on September 11th.
That's a fascinating element to that. And again, especially because it is a really tough decision for so many people that go into this business, and how you're going to figure out the balance. And, you know, I think sometimes I like hearing the stories about when their kids, they see you on television for the first time. And do you remember hearing about that, when your kids finally started to realize like what you do, and they could see you on TV, and even though you weren't there, you kind of were still there with them?
Yeah. I mean, they could care less, honestly, for years and years and years. They could care less. And then when I got the role in Cars 3, that's when like it all kind of, you know, it was like the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we would be walking through like the grocery store, and they would tell people that their mommy was in Cars 3. And now it's like, it's cool for them now, because they kind of get it. But I also try to, you know, when they ask me about my job, and I say to them, yeah, mommy loves your job, but my favorite job in the whole wide world is being your mommy, you know. And I try to remind them that, because it's funny, they think they know everybody. I was just telling someone this story today. Like, they'll see a little kid on TV and they'll be like, oh, that's my friend from school. And because I think just because they see mommy, or they see, you know, Adam Alexander, Mr. Adam, or Jamie Little, who's a very close friend of mine that they know, and they just think that they know everybody on TV. But they're certainly really, really proud of me, and really proud of, obviously, the Cars 3 thing.
Right. And now a connection too for Daytona for you. I think this is now your 13th year covering the event.
Crazy.
Do you remember the first NASCAR event that you ever attended as a fan and not necessarily a member of the media? Was it before you started covering the sport, or was it after?
No, I mean, I've been honest, like, I never really, I mean, I knew about NASCAR, and I watched NASCAR, but I grew up in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You know, we didn't have the track when I was there. And we were, you know, I was all college sports, everything growing up, college, NFL. So it wasn't until probably, you know, the early 2000s when I started to really watch NASCAR. And the first event that I ever went to, I was living in New York, and I actually, Roush Fenway Racing flew me to Charlotte, North Carolina to interview for a PR position. And it was the All-Star event, and I believe Greg Biffle won that race, but it was probably 2003. That was the first event that I ever went to. And of course, you know, I've been to every single racetrack multiple times. I've covered every single event that there is in NASCAR over the years. And so it's been amazing. I feel like for so long, when I first started doing this in 05, 06, I was so green and didn't know what I was doing. ESPN was a great place for me to start because I got so many reps, right? Because you're 24-hour-a-day sports station. You're constantly doing reports. You're constantly doing live shots. And I was so green. I remember standing there before live shots just shaking like a leaf or taking a really long time to just read four tracks for a piece because I had no idea what I was doing. And then over the years, you finally get to the point. And NASCAR, too, I didn't know a whole lot. I would stay in the garage. I would talk to crew chiefs, work extra time to ask questions from those guys. And then you get to a point where you're kind of like, all right, yeah, I know this. I've been doing this for a really long time now. So I think 2003, 2004 was my very first race that I ever went to. And certainly the Daytona 500, there's no question it's the most special one that we have.
Do you remember any early influences within NASCAR that either helped you get started or people that you watched, whether they were coworkers or others through television or radio or whatever, that helped you start to feel more comfortable as you started to progress in this industry?
Well, Marty Smith is at ESPN. He's one of my closest friends.
Friend of the podcast, Marty Smith.
Yeah, he had a lot of friends in the NASCAR garage, and I knew very few people. And we both got hired at ESPN at the same time. We actually were at Speed Channel together before that. We had a show called Backseat Drivers, which both of us admittedly, like, we had no idea what we were doing. They gave two of us who had done very little TV a live TV show, and we were kind of like, all right, here we go. But I give Marty, he took me under his wing and he introduced me to a lot of people. And a lot of people were a lot more patient with me because I was Marty's friend while I was trying to find my footing in the NASCAR garage. And so certainly he was a huge help in getting me sort of acclimated into the industry. I think Chris Devoda is someone that I've always admired and I'm proud to call her a friend and certainly look up to her. She was in the garage before I was, doing exactly what we're doing right now. And she had made the leap to NFL. She had done some NFL games and some college games well before I did. And so I think Krista is someone that I have always looked up to as well. And Jamie Little. Jamie and I started at ESPN at the same time. She had already done the Indy 500. She had done Supercross. She was a superstar. And she became a very, very close friend of mine and still is. And fortunately, in this industry, I think there's so many times when you're a woman in this industry that you don't necessarily have another woman with you day to day, every single weekend, because you are, you know, you sit at the table for a production meeting and oftentimes you're the only woman. And that wasn't the case with me and Jamie. And fortunately, we got married while we were covering NASCAR. We both had children while we were covering NASCAR. And to have her as a really close friend and someone I could lean on and turn to was huge for me.
As far as the actual week itself, starting into Daytona week and all the different shows that you guys are going to be doing, starting with NASCAR Race Harm on Monday and going throughout the week with Media Day on Wednesday, are there any particular storylines that stand out to you, knowing that this is going to be something talked about leading up until the very moments of the race and even throughout?
I think there's a million storylines. I when I came back in, when I got rehired by Fox in 2016, I felt like that season there was a lot of change. Like I felt like, you know, Stuart Haas Racing, we had a new, you know, was getting Clint Bowyer. We had a new sponsor in NASCAR. But I feel like this year, it was just the changes from cars and crew chiefs and drivers going to all different places. I think it's a really interesting year. I mean, I think the biggest story, you know, when that green flag drops is going to be the young guy that's leading the field to green and the veteran who won yesterday in the Clash, and that's Jimmy Johnson. I think so many people are interested to see how that switch goes, how Chad Knaus going over to William Byron and Jimmy Johnson now working with a new crew chief is going to go. And I think, you know, the Ford, I mean, the new aero package that we're going to see in Atlanta is going to be huge. I think there's a whole lot of change and a whole lot of momentum going into 2019 for NASCAR. I'm excited to see how it plays out. This is a tremendously busy week for us because we have Race Hub today on Monday, and then tomorrow, and then Media Day, and then of course the Duel on Thursday. We have the Xfinity race on Saturday and the Cup race, the Daytona 500 on Sunday. We have the new studio that we've been working for well over a year to try to launch. Last week was our first week on Race Hub that we were able to launch it. Yesterday was the first time we kind of opened it up for race coverage. It's spectacular. The things that we've done with digitally and with all of these graphics and the things that we can bring to the fan at home is absolutely incredible. It's funny, I oftentimes look in the monitor and see what's behind us, and I'm blown away. And there's been a couple times, if you've seen the shots, you know that we're on a green screen. And there's been a couple of times where I've turned around to kind of look at what I'm seeing in the monitor when I realize that we're on a green screen. But it's been fantastic. Our folks here have been working so hard, and it's a really beautiful product that they've put on.
Maybe this is a little bit broadcast nerdy on my part, but I remember when we talked to Tony Reale on this podcast, and he just started at the new ESPN studios in New York and the new studio for Around the Horn. One of the things he was talking about was, you know, being able to take advantage of everything that the new studio and the new graphics were able to offer without necessarily making it the star of the show. He still wanted the writers and the panel to be the star. So is that a weird sort of balance that you have to work with as being the host, knowing that you have all these different tools at your disposal, but you don't necessarily want them to be the ones that people are really remembering throughout the entire broadcast?
Yeah, I think fortunately for us, a lot of times Larry McReynolds, who's, you know, sort of our rules analyst and our crew chief of the group, he's the one that's kind of using, whether it be the cutaway car or specific graphics or really kind of in-depth things. We fortunately just, like, if you saw the show yesterday, we had the ability to kind of open these huge garage doors and you could see the whole track of Daytona behind us, or we could have virtual cars pop up, and we did that with the 88 of and the 24 who are going to be on the front row for the Daytona 500. So we kind of had them pop up behind us. We oftentimes don't reference them. I just think it's really kind of a cool eye candy for the fans at home. I don't know if we can use these things enough. I think certainly in conversations, our analysts are the stars, and they are the people who are bringing all these information, because they're the ones that were in the race cars. I mean, Jamie McMurray is going to be in the Daytona 500 this week, and then he's going to be on our set with us next week and next weekend. You know, Michael Waltrip has won this race. He knows what it's like to be inside that car. Regan Smith, he was in these race cars last year. And so for me, I'm always focused on those guys, because those are the guys who can really tell me what's going on or what a driver's feeling or how the track is changing, which I think the graphics, it just adds to the experience. But those are the ones that can take me inside those race cars.
A couple of things that I've noticed too in leading up to this week is right on the NASCAR.com webpage, like right at the very top, one of the top stories is talking about the different odds in Vegas for favorites to win. And, you know, there's another article right next door about different prop bets. And, you know, and I'm wondering, as part of your guys' coverage, you know, this is a story with CBS ahead of the Super Bowl that they weren't going to make a whole lot of references to sports wagering and gambling on the Super Bowl, despite it being the most gambling event across the world. Is that going to be a part of your coverage? Is that something that you guys have been having in different meetings leading up to it? Will the wagering side of the Daytona 500 be a part of the conversation for your guys' shows?
Not for me, because I know nothing about gambling. Zero. Like, I am so, like they try to do, like, over-unders, like, for our NFL, just like we do a friendly little kind of, like, a group thing. And I have no idea. Like, I have no idea. I wish that I did. I can do a pick 'em, and that's about it. But I know it's a big deal, and I know that the integration is definitely happening. And we do have a segment on our show every week called Let It Ride with Todd Furman from Vegas.
Sure.
And so he talks about odds. But for me personally, I know it's a big deal for people. I don't know a whole lot about it. Like, I might throw a stat in every once in a while, like what the odds are. or I might find it really interesting to know what the odds that of William Byron winning the Daytona 500 are, and then if he were to go on and win it. But that's not part of I'm not a gambler. I don't do that in my everyday life, so it's not something that I will. I don't know what I'm talking about, so I'm not going to talk about it, right? And that's one thing that I think you learn at a very young age in this business. If you don't know what you're talking about, you either find out before you talk about it, or you're just going to look dumb. And so I'm going to let the experts handle that.
I think that's perfectly reasonable. I will give you something that's right up your alley, though, with regards to the race. Let's switch it over from the gambling side to say if you were putting together a NASCAR fantasy team for the Daytona 500, and you know, you didn't have to worry about salaries or anything like that. You could just choose the three drivers that you feel put yourself in a position to finish in the top three in this race, or maybe somebody that's a surprise that you don't think a lot of people would be on. So if you were building this little mini NASCAR fantasy team for the Daytona 500, who do you think the three drivers would be that you'd want to make sure you have on your team for this Sunday?
So I do know how to do this because I oftentimes am involved in sort of the fantasy leagues, but Joey Logano would be my high pick. He's obviously going to be very expensive if you were doing sort of a fantasy league and had to use points or money or whatever to purchase him. I think Joey's number one. I'm going to go maybe Chase Elliott. I think 2017 he had a good chance at winning this and ran out of fuel. So I'm going to go Chase Elliott. And then my underdog, which I don't know how much of an underdog he is, particularly after what we saw yesterday in the Clash, but Paul Menard, he's finished fifth and sixth the last 2 years in the Daytona 500. And so I think that he would be someone that I would pick, but certainly Joey Logano would be at the top of my list. I think he's the best, if not one of the best restrictor plate race car drivers that we have out there right now. And I think Penske and Ford, we saw just how strong they were yesterday. And so I think it would be hard not to pick the 22.
Shannon, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate you stopping by and getting us ready for a full week of Daytona 500 coverage. And don't forget, you guys can watch Shannon all week long on FS1, on Fox. And don't forget about the race starting at 2:30 p.m. East Coast time this Sunday for the 2019 Daytona 500. Shannon, thank you for the time.
Thank you. You too.